Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, June 12th, 2020. Section A. MMH. Most of latest cases younger than 60. Myers, Wilson reiterate need to practice social distancing, wear masks. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. The number of confirmed coronavirus cases in Midland County has increased by about 50% since the beginning of the month. The Midland Health Department reported another 14 cases on Thursday, bringing the total to 194 since the pandemic started, up from 129 at the start of June. The spike has been enough that Midland health officials are saying that coronavirus still exists and lives in the community. Both Midland Health President CEO Russell Myers and Chief Medical Officer Larry Wilson said Thursday that good news is that those impacted are younger and have immune systems capable of handling the virus. The statistics back up their comments in terms of the age of those impacted. Midland Health Department statistics show of the 65 cases reported since the end of May, 57 are younger than 60, and of those, 40 are in their 30s or younger. They tend to be younger than the cases we had seen earlier in the process, Myers said. Almost all of the new cases are isolating at home. Myers said Thursday that four patients at Midland Memorial Hospital have coronavirus, and one of those is in critical care. Both Myers and Wilson talked about how important it was to keep coronavirus from spreading to the city's older residents, especially those in senior living facilities. Both men also said that while it was important for the community to open back up, they have seen a relationship between people being more active and the spread of the virus. Transmissibility is not a question. There should not be any doubt in anybody's mind, Wilson said. Wilson also reminded Midland County residents that it is important to practice social distancing and good hygiene and to wear a mask. Both Wilson and Myers said Midlanders have become too relaxed in their efforts. The way you can mitigate that is by wearing the mask, Wilson said. I know people don't want to do that. I don't like to do it any more than anybody else. But at the end of the day, you're going to decrease the breath getting out into space around you by wearing the mask. Myers said testing has ramped up in nursing homes based on Governor Greg Abbott's order. He also said around 25 to 35 tests are being performed daily at Midland Health facilities. He added private practices also are performing tests on a daily basis. MCSO requests funds for riot gear amid protests by Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. The Midland County Sheriff's Office has requested about $34,000 in funding from the Commissioner's Court to purchase riot gear after several local Black Lives Matter protests and ahead of a protest by the Tyanders arrest planned for late June. During a budget hearing on Monday, an official with the Sheriff's Office said they needed about $22,000 to purchase body armor, shields, and gas masks. He said they also are planning to purchase four tear gas grenade launchers for about $12,000. County Judge Terry Johnson said in an interview that he told MCSO to request the funds for riot gear after he attended a Black Lives Matter protest at Midland Park Mall. No one protected the two groups of demonstrators, he said. The May 31st demonstration at the mall drew a small crowd of counter-protesters in addition to the Black Lives Matter protesters. The counter-protesters brought Make America Great Again and Confederate flags and antagonized the demonstrators. Though violence did not break out between the two groups, Johnson said there was concern MCSO would not be properly protected if fighting began. He said while the Midland Police Department had face shields and other protective gear, the sheriff's office had nothing except their uniforms. He said he doesn't want to militarize the law enforcement agency, but does want MCSO to have what officers need. People in northern states can do what they want, Johnson said, but we're Texas, and matter of fact, we're West Texas. A unit of officers has been selected to serve as a riot squad if needed. He said that those officers will receive 3 months of training on using the riot gear. There were several protests held in Midland last week following the death of George Floyd after a Minneapolis police officer kneeled on his neck during an arrest. There is another demonstration planned for Tuesday at Mid-City's church, organized by Christians for a Change. The protest of Anders' arrest is being held by Dallas-based activism group Next Generation Action Network and is planned for June 27th at Washington Park in Midland. Anders was charged with evading arrest after failing to pull over when an officer initiated a traffic stop. Rally at Mid-City's Church calls for equal treatment by Caitlin Randall. CRANDLE at MRT.com. A demonstration planned for next week at Mid-City's Church in Midland will demand equal treatment for black and brown Americans, according to a press release. Christians for a Change will host the protest along with local leaders and law enforcement. Christians for a Change will be hosting a peaceful, silent demonstration to display community-wide unity as we advocate for equal treatment for black and brown Americans in our city and the nation. The organization believes it's the church's responsibility to lead during the current nationwide unrest following George Floyd's death. We believe in the power of us all standing as the body of Christ to show our city that we hear them and support them. We would like to invite everyone from all black backgrounds to silently stand with us in an organized demonstration and prayer vigil for justice and peace. We believe it is critical for racial reconciliation, social justice, and our community's oneness. According to the release, Christians for a Change is a faith-based group of men and women who use their voices, platforms, and resources to come together in love, exercising the right to advocate for groups in need of a voice. The demonstration will be held beginning at 7 p.m. Tuesday in the parking lot of Mid-City's Church, 8700 North Highway 191. COVID-19 cases in Midland up to 194, from staff reports. This week will set a record for the most coronavirus cases during the pandemic. The 14 cases reported Thursday have pushed the total to 39 this week, according to the Midland Health Department. That is 10 more than the previous busiest week. The health department also reported that there were 26 confirmed cases last week, bringing the total to 65 in June. The results showed that all confirmed cases were younger than 60 and balanced between the four age ranges of between 20 and 59. The health department also reported that the source of exposure for the confirmed cases was 7 contact with known source, 3 community acquired, and 2 by travel, including one man in his 40s who traveled outside the United States. 2 of the 14 cases are still under investigation, according to the press release. 2 of the confirmed cases, a male in his 30s and a male in his 20s, are employees of HEB on Loop 250. Another of Thursday's confirmed cases, a female in her 20s, works at Chick-fil-A West, and a female in her 40s works at American Momentum Bank. None of them were in customer-facing roles, according to the release. Ector County reported 6 more cases of coronavirus on Wednesday, making the total 227. Hector County reported 31 probable cases at this time. ECHD reported that 152 people have recovered. There have been 3,083 tests taken, with 2,780 negative results and 76 pending. ECHD has contacted 2,195 people during contact tracing. Medical Center Health Center System Director of Public Relations, Trevor Tankersley, said MCH has taken 140 tests positive. 15 patients are being treated for coronavirus at MCH. 7 of the patients are on the isolation floor. 3 of those patients are residents of Focused Care Odessa. 6 patients are in critical care. 2 of those patients are residents of Focused Care Odessa, and 2 are on ventilators. MCH has taken 1,646 tests, with 447 negative and 59 still pending. Odessa Regional Medical Center CEO and President Stacy Brown said ORMC has tested 26 positive people. The hospital is treating 2 patients for coronavirus, with 1 patient on a ventilator. ORMC has taken 463 tests, with 431 negative and 6 still pending.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, June 12, 2020. City pools are open. Doug Russell Pool and Washington Family Aquatic Center are open, but because of staffing and coronavirus limitations, are operating on different days. Russell will be open Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Washington will be open Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. Both pools will be closed on Mondays for maintenance and training. Entry passes, which are $3, will be sold for 3-hour sessions. They go on sale at the pool 30 minutes before the posted opening times and are good only for the day of purchase. Punch cards will not be sold this year, according to a press release from the city. Because of staffing limitations and coronavirus precautions, there won't be private parties, lap swim times, swimming lessons, or family nights. Pool furniture will be removed from both pools, but swimmers will be allowed to bring chairs. The schedule is Washington, noon to 3 p.m. and 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday and Friday, 1 to 4 p.m. and 5 to 8 p.m. Sunday. Doug Russell, noon to 3 p.m. and 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Anders protest rescheduled. The Dallas-based activism group Next Generation Action Network, which is planning to come to Midland to protest the Ty Anders incident, has rescheduled the event. The protest, originally set for June 20, is now planned for June 27 at Washington Park, according to a Facebook post. Farmers Market will open Saturday. The Midland Downtown Farmers Market will be open 8 to 11 a.m. Saturday at the Museum of the Southwest. Organizers have established guidelines for customers to follow. Masks should be worn, vendors have them for sale, and use sanitizer at booths. Practice social distancing, 6 feet, while in line at booths and throughout the market. Leave after purchases are made. Do not congregate in the open spaces between booths or on the lawn. Contactless payment is encouraged. Venmo, PayPal, or Apple Pay. Most vendors will accept cash or card. Anyone who is ill should postpone their visit. Coronavirus tests. First Med of Midland, 201-1403. Midland Urgent Care Clinics.com. Cash price for virtual visit for COVID-19, $75. Cash price for nasal swab PCR test, $70. Cash price for COVID-19 antibody test, $50. Cash price for office visit, $120 to $150. Midland Memorial Hospital, 68 nurse. MidlandHealth.org. Mobile testing center at West Campus for COVID-19 nasal swab PCR. Must call for appointment. Antibody testing at West Campus or Main Campus Direct Access. 68 nurse, 221-1111. Cash price for antibody testing, $50. Signature Care, 699-2601. ercare24.com/Midland. Cash price for COVID-19 nasal swab PCR test. Visit plus test, $175. Cash price for antibody test, visit plus test, $175. Cash price for both COVID-19 nasal swab, PCR, and antibody, $300. If patients are insured, we'll need to pay copay. Rest will be billed to insurance. Copay waived for first responders.
The opinion page. Opinion extra. From J. Ambrose, Tribune News Service. Violent protests only make situation worse. A noble cause led to ignoble riots, and a major consequence could be something far different from the erasure of racism that some are fervently, worthily seeking. It could be a rise of crime in black neighborhoods, thousands of black deaths, an outcome working in tandem with the coronavirus doing its devastation, a tragic setback instead of a great awakening. The start of the pandemonium was a horror that millions saw on video, the death of George Floyd, handcuffed, lying on his stomach and saying he could not breathe, as a seemingly unbothered white policeman kept his knee pointlessly on Floyd's neck. Other racial horrors came to mind, from slavery to lynchings to segregation, and the question is whether such dehumanization will ever cease. Peaceful protests began all over the country, but soon enough in Minneapolis, where Floyd died, we had vast numbers moving angrily toward a police station. The city's mayor told cops to get out of the way, and they did, as the demonstrators set the building aflame. And then, across the country, any number of violent protests broke out. A retired cop was shot to death, and a Florida cop had his neck slashed. A woman was beaten while trying to save her business. Merchandise of all kinds was stolen from stores, and bottles have been thrown at the heads of policemen, sometimes accurately. What is astonishing is that many mayors and governors seem to think standing back is the right response. And now we hear the cry of defunding police forces for keeping them small and out of the way. They will be kept out of the way, all right, but by self-direction. A study by scholars shows that highly publicized protests condemning police cause police to interact less with citizens, to be less proactive, to step back. The consequence is more crime. Concerning the riots and looting, Terrence Floyd, the brother of George Floyd, has said that violence will not bring my brother back. And as Martin Luther King Jr. proved, the real way to progress is nonviolence. There are things that should be done, such as making it less easy for police using their unions to escape serious repercussions from the wrongs they commit. A serious cultural issue for blacks and whites is fatherless homes. Another Harvard study showed this is the number one hindrance to social mobility. Our schools need fixing, and we should have more instances like those in which policemen have hugged the peaceful protesters and knelt with them to pray. Obituaries and death notices. The community of St. Lawrence mourns the loss of their beloved brother, Jerome F. Holscher, 83, who went to be with the Lord on June 10th. Jerome was born August 22, 1936, at home near Rowena, Texas. He was the oldest child of Lawrence B. and Alma Peltzer Holscher. A rosary will be held on Friday, June 12th at 7 p.m. at the St. Lawrence Catholic Church. The funeral mass will be held on Saturday, June 13th at 2 p.m. Burial will follow at St. Lawrence Catholic Cemetery. The funeral mass will be live-streamed on Facebook for those who are unable to attend. Arrangements are being handled by Nally Pickleman Welsh Funeral Home in Big Spring. Online condolences can be made at www.mpw.com. Rolando Molinar Salas, 35 years of age, left us on June 5th. He was born in Midland and was raised in Presidio. He is survived by his son, Mael, his parents, his sisters, and his brothers, 14 nieces and nephews. V. viewing will be held Friday, June 12th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. at the Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel in Midland. Funeral service will be on Saturday, June 13th at the Heavenly Gate Funeral Home. Burial will follow in Serenity Memorial Gardens. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to any of the close relatives. Sandra Boyd Michener of Charlestown, West Virginia, passed away peacefully on June 9th from complications of COVID-19, combined with a long struggle with Parkinson's disease. She was 25 years breast cancer survivor. She was born to the late Bernice and Ruby Seawright in Cleveland, Missouri, on September 17th, 1941. Left to cherish her memory are her husband, sister, daughter, and son, and grandchildren. Memorial services will be announced at a later date. Memorial donations may be sent to the Parkinson's Foundation at www.parkinsons.org. Arrangements are by Melvin T. Strider Colonial Funeral Home, Charlestown, West Virginia. Willard Will Wayne Luft, 70, of Midland, passed away Saturday, May 23rd. He was born to William and Anna Luft on July 18, 1949, in Freud, Montana. Will is survived by his wife Rita, daughter Marina, and grandson Alex. He had two brothers, three brothers, and numerous nieces and nephews. He will be missed by his great friends. He is preceded in death by his parents and brother, Raymond. Sharon Lynn Jennings, 54, of Midland, passed away Monday, June 8th. A memorial service will be Friday, June 12th at 4:30 p.m. at Solid Rock Fellowship Out West, 4601 I-20, Midland. She is survived by her daughter, Heather Jennings, her parents, James and Joanne Thomas, two sisters and four grandchildren.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, June 12th, 2020. Section A. Woodall resigns from board. Under fire for offensive Facebook posts, Ector County ISD Board of Trustees member Doyle Woodall resigned late Wednesday night. Woodall has been elected twice to the board, serving a total of a little more than 11 years. There were protests outside the school board meeting June 9th, and people who spoke against keeping Woodall on the board during the workshop meeting. Mike Atkins, attorney for ECISD, said the board can either fill the vacancy themselves, or since it's less than a year until the next election, they can leave it vacant. The next school board election is in May 2021. To his knowledge, Atkins said there is no process to fill the vacancy. He can think of one or two times that it's happened, and everyone's a little different. Atkins said his guess is that the board would collectively decide the best way to fill the spot. There's not a mandatory process, but historically what they've done is advertise to the media, and then anybody who showed up and showed an interest and meets the qualifications, they have interviewed, Atkins said. Woodall's resignation letter reviews his accomplishments on the board and highlights what he's most proud of. It is with no regret that I, at this time, tender my resignation effectively, immediately, but not for the reasons you may think. My 88-year-old mother is ill, and it takes a lot of time to help her, but that is not the main reason. I was blindsided by a life-altering family issue Tuesday evening. My family has always came first. I don't know if it will take weeks, months, or years to resolve these issues, but I know I can't give all children and teachers the time it takes to do this job. They deserve so much more than I can give them at this time. After these issues are resolved, I may run again in 2021 if my situation allows, the letter said. While on the board, Woodall wrote, he has served as secretary three times, vice president and president during vice president twice and president during the 2018-19 school year. During that year, we brought in Jim Nelson to be our interim superintendent and passed a TRE. My proudest moment was when we named Scott Murray to be our new superintendent. That was no small feat. Some board members were pushing to hire in-house and did not want to go to the expense and effort to do an exhaustive search. Because I stood my ground, ECISD now has arguably the best superintendent in the nation, the letter said. He expressed thanks to those who have supported him and asks that they continue to support the schools. We have an amazing superintendent and staff. ECISD has wonderful teachers who truly love and encourage all of your children. The board is one of the best in Texas, Woodall wrote. To the few thousand who have protested against me, to the cowards who have called on restricted numbers with their death threats, and to the many small-minded people who believe a person is a racist if you disagree with them, it's been fun, he wrote. It is with no regrets that I send this letter. If all of this hadn't happened, I still would have resigned on this date. Woodall said Thursday that family comes first, and he would still have turned in the letter if none of the other things, like the protests, had existed. It has nothing to do with the small minds of other people, Woodall said. Asked about the family issue that had blindsided him, he said that was personal and private and had nothing to do with his mother. If the family issues have been resolved, he said he may run again in 2021. I've done a lot of good for this school district. If I run again and people elect me, everybody else can just shut their mouth about it. And if I get beat 99% to 1%, that's okay too. But if I come out and win the election with 70% of the votes like I have every time, then they have to shut their mouth. There won't be a thing they can do about it, Woodall said, because my people will have chosen me. And if they choose not to choose me, that will be fine too. Woodall said he was ready to fight. God. Doctor Says Mask Wearing is New Social Contract by Michael Merlot. Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Saravanan said that the people being affected the most by COVID-19 in Ector County are of the working class population that's actually going out and engaging with the community during Thursday's virtual hospital briefing. He referenced a website from Johns Hopkins University showing COVID-19 data around the country and a graph representing Ector County. Our data currently tells us this disease process hasn't been through our community in full force, so the part that we can still make an impact on is preventing this disease process from coming into our community. Saravanan said that although wearing a mask cannot be enforced, it's a social contract that we have with each other to enforce that kind of thing. We still have the opportunity to keep this at bay and not let it get out of hand, he said. Saravanan spoke about the new normal and about large social gatherings in the area, including a prom scheduled for Midland and Odessa high school students who missed out on their own prom and graduation. If everybody who is attending this event is understanding of what social distancing means, what wearing a face covering means, and what it means to not get up on the dance floor and be all together, right next to each other, then this is fine. We can do this. We have to live our life. He added that the decision to attend social gatherings is more than a personal one. It's not just about you, but it's about your uncle or your grandmother who you're going to go home to. It's about your friends who may have those high-risk populations, he said. The Ector County Health Department website detailed Thursday that there are currently 69 active cases in the county. 227 patients have tested positive for the virus, 31 were probable, and 152 people have recovered from the virus. 6 Ector County residents have died from COVID-19 related illness. A health department press release detailed that Deering's Nursing Home in Odessa received results for 46 residents and 31 staff members all of which are negative. Director of Public Relations at Medical Center Hospital, Trevor Tankersley, reported that MCH has 7 more cases than Wednesday. MCH has had 140 positives and 13 patients are in the hospital. 7 are on a designated floor, including 3 focused care at Odessa residents. 6 residents are in the CCU, 2 are on ventilators. 2 focused care at Odessa residents are in the CCU, and neither are on a ventilator. An MCH release detailed. 59 MCH test results are pending. ORMC President Stacy Brown reported that out of 463 tests, 23 people tested positive, 431 tested negative, 6 are pending. Brown said 2 patients are in the hospital and 1 is on a ventilator. Odessa Mayor David Turner said his test results after being exposed to someone with the virus came back negative. City of Odessa Public Information Officer Devin Sanchez reported that due to the increase in cases in the city, there will be no special events at any park facilities until September 8th. And then Parks and Recreation will review the decision and see if that date needs to be extended. The website Sarah Vannon referenced can be located at https://tinyurl.com/VTHRACX. Quick hits. Sales tax down. The City of Odessa received its June sales tax check totaling $4,073,485.06. This amount includes the economic development sales tax of 0.25 cents. The City of Odessa will receive $3,258,788.05, and the Odessa Development Corporation will receive $814,697.01. The city saw a decrease in sales tax revenue with June's sales tax revenue total of $3,258,788.05, which is $1.6 million or 33.86% as compared to June 2019. The year-to-date total sales tax revenue for fiscal year 2019-20 is up 28.77% or $8,620,701.85 as compared to budgeted amount expected at this point in the fiscal year. In addition, the 2019-20 year-to-date amount is below the previous fiscal year-to-date amount by $5.7 million or 13.01%. The city has budgeted $41,100,000 in net sales tax revenues for this current fiscal year. Sales tax revenue is generated by sales tax revenue from 2 months prior to collection, meaning June's collection is based on April sales. Gun Expo. Silver Spur Trade Shows has scheduled a gun exposition from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. Admission is $7 for adults, $2 off for first responders, free for children under 12 and law enforcement with a badge, and $12 for a 2-day pass. Call area code 806-253-1322, email info@silverspurtradeshows.com, or visit silverspurtradeshows.com. Live concert. The Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center has scheduled a ZZ Top live HD show streaming concert at 7 p.m. Saturday. To register, visit tinyurl.com/y8zfjw7 UT. UTPB gives more than $500,000 to students. The University of Texas Permian Basin remains committed to helping students receive the support they need during these unprecedented times brought on by COVID-19. To that end, as of June 10th, UT Permian Basin has distributed more than $500,000 in aid to students who have requested assistance through the Student Emergency Fund or CARES Act. The University of Texas Permian Basin truly is a place that cares about not only the success of our students, but their well-being. The Student Emergency Fund process provides the opportunity to identify and remove barriers, Associate Dean of Students Corey Benson said in a news release. Many students lost their source of income due to COVID-19, which means they couldn't afford food, a plane ticket home, or tuition for their classes. That's where we step in to help. So far, 633 UTPB students have received assistance either from the Student Emergency Fund or the CARES Act. Every request submitted is reviewed by a committee of university officials to determine the appropriate resources to provide, a news release said. UT Permian Basin is committed to helping our students graduate. COVID-19 has caused a loss of momentum toward an academic success for some students. We hope these funds can help steer those facing hardships in the right direction, but we know our work is not done yet, added Benson. A breakdown of the $500,153.92 in aid that has been distributed by UTPB since March follows. CARES Act funds. 369 students have been awarded as of June 9th. $355,100 has been applied to student accounts. Student Emergency Fund. $145,053.92 has been awarded through the review process from the below listed sources. $86,165.22 scholarship funds applied to student account. Source, scholarship funds authorized by Office of Advancement and or Office of Financial Aid. $48,255 additional state or federal aid applied to student account based on remaining eligibility. Source, state and federal funds. $10,633.70 Student Emergency Fund Award applied to student account. Gift cards provided directly to student. Direct purchase of flight. Source, emergency fund. Fix West Texas to host vaccination and microchip clinic by Sam Waller. Fix West Texas will hold a vaccination and microchip clinic for dogs and cats Saturday at the West Texas Horse Center. The clinic will operate from 1 to 4 p.m., offering basic rabies shots for $12, up to a full set of vaccinations and blood work for $75. Appointments are required and may be made through the Fix West Texas website, www.fixwesttexas.org. Fees must be paid at the time of registering for an appointment. The goal here is trying to keep everyone's pet healthy, said Fix West Texas board member Karen Patterson. We've had a lot of parvo in the community. We can help prevent that by giving the immunizations. We also help residents stay compliant with the local regulations in regards to the rabies vaccination. State and local law requires you to have at least a rabies vaccination. All cities and counties require it. You can actually receive a ticket if you have an animal that isn't current on rabies. The clinic is one of four being conducted around the Permian Basin this weekend, starting at 9 a.m. Saturday at the Rankin Fire Department. On Sunday, clinics will be held at 9 a.m. at the Midland County Horseshoe Arena and at 1 p.m. at Comanche Trails Amphitheater in Big Spring. On June 18th and 19th, Fix West Texas will conduct its first spay and neuter clinic since March at the Horseshoe Arena. We're almost full for appointments for these clinics, Patterson said, but we'll have additional clinics in July that we'll open up appointments for soon. Patterson said the Odessa clinic should be able to process about 360 animals during its three-hour time slot. It's a drive-through setup so people won't have to get in and out of their car, Patterson said. We're doing it prepaid so that way it's already handled and it's pretty quick. If you go, fix West Texas West Odessa Vaccination Clinic, 1 to 4 p.m. Saturday at West Texas Horse Center, 2400 Moss Avenue, cost $12 to $75. Information, www.fixwesttexas.org. West Texas Blowout. The West Texas Blowout has been scheduled for July 17th and 18th at the Grande Stadium, 801 North Loop 250 West in Midland. Live entertainment will be presented by Coy Wetzel, Josh Abbott Band, Randall King, Tristan Marez, Duelo, AJ Castillo, Palominos, Ruben Ramos, Little Joe y La Familia, and Eric and Masori. In addition, a Guerrero Memorial 3-meet cook-off will also take place July 17th and 18th at the Cimarex Pavilion, 5514 Champions Drive in Midland. Cook-off entries and entry deadline is July 15th. Sponsorship opportunities are available. For tickets or more information, visit www.westtexasblowout.com. Man charged with punching and choking wife. An Odessa Police Department affidavit detailed that a 32-year-old man punched his wife in the face while choking her with his knee. Seth Lee Bailey was charged with assault by strangulation, family violence, a third-degree felony. The reported assault happened around 7:20 a.m. Wednesday in the 2900 block of North Century Avenue, an OPD affidavit detailed. The victim, identified as Raiha Bailey, reportedly told officers she was assaulted by her lawful husband after an argument. She stated that her husband threw her to the ground during the argument and placed his knee on her neck, which caused her to lose the ability to breathe for an undetermined period of time, and he continued to strike her in the facial area. Raheela Bailey stated she was able to get away and ran out the door to an unknown residence to contact the police. Officers reportedly saw Raheela Bailey with injuries to the left side above her eye, which was consistent with being struck in the face. Officers also saw redness around her neck area. Seth Bailey was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He was booked into jail Wednesday. His bond hasn't been set, and he was still in custody as of Thursday morning, jail records show. Neighbors Concerned About Airbnbs by Michael Merlo. Chris Harrington said that the first night he knew there was a problem with the Airbnb next door was when he kept seeing trucks park in the driveway for about 15 minutes and then they would leave. Harrington said he asked one of the men who drove up what was going on in the house, and the man said nothing. Then he called the police. That was probably 6 or 7 months ago, he added, and said since then there's been loud parties, beer bottles left in the yard, and trucks racing up and down the cul-de-sac. Our whole neighborhood's in an uproar about it because we've got tons of little kids running around, he said, adding that he and other neighbors believe there may be illegal activity at the home. Harrington and some of his neighbors have voiced their concerns about the Airbnb on social media and to city officials. Harrington said, that he decided to reach out to his Facebook friends because he got the city involved, but the city is kind of dragging their feet on everything. We've had police over there so many times, he said, adding that he knew it was out of their hands. Harrington knows the owner, Jose Gaona, who is leasing the house to another man, Steve Palma, who has listed the house as an Airbnb. The City of Odessa Public Information Officer Devin Sanchez reported that it is against city ordinance to have an Airbnb in a single-family dwelling in Odessa. Harrington said he confronted Palma and told him that all the parties needed to stop and asked Palma if he realized what he was doing was against the zoning ordinance. He goes, "Yeah, I know it is," Harrington said, and that Palma told him he had other Airbnb homes in Odessa and Midland. "Nobody wants to do anything about it, and it's becoming a huge problem in our neighborhood, and I know we're not the only ones. This is going on all over the city, I'm sure," he said. Debbie Harkrider is also a resident in the neighborhood. She said that after failed attempts at trying to get the owner to do something, as well as the city, for almost a year, she had reached out to KWES 9 when she saw they were doing a story on Airbnbs. She had recently called District 3 Councilman Dewey Bryant and said he responded quickly, saying that he would look into it. In an interview, Bryant said that he sent the email to Community Development Director Marita Sandoval because of code enforcement. Sandoval, on Tuesday, said that she didn't know the status at the time and would have to go back and look. It's hard to prove these things, okay? It's really hard to prove because if we need to take somebody to court, we gotta have evidence, she said. Harrington sent the Odessa American the Airbnb listing that had pictures on the front of the house, including the address in the single dwelling neighborhood, which he said is prohibited. Harkrider said the neighbors and her were given witness sheets and were to fill out what they saw. Harkrider said that a previous renter of the home had also listed the home on Airbnb and that the parties had been going on for almost a year. The owner could have stopped this a long time ago, she added, saying they've contacted the owner multiple times. If there are regulations from Airbnb, I'd like to see them enforced, she said. I get a ticket if my weeds are 3 feet tall, and that's not that big of a deal. Why is this so much different is kind of my question. Why is this different when there's obvious rules being broken and calls to the police? She said she hoped that rules would be enforced for the Airbnb next door and that the city and police were being helpful, but she was not confident the city would follow through with enforcement. On Wednesday, Gaona said that on April 10th, he received notice from the City of Odessa Code Enforcement Division referencing the property he leases to Palma. He learned that he was in violation of Zoning Ordinance Section 14-2. He said he reached out to the city and asked them for 30 days to resolve the issue. On May 10th, Gaona asked for more time, and the city granted him an extension until June 15th. In the time given to us to resolve the issue, I have been working with the third party, Palma, to meet contractual obligations. As of June 7th, those contractual obligations have been met. The City of Odessa has been notified that we are no longer in violation, and we are waiting for them to verify, he said. Harkrider said that she had been in touch with Paul Vedetto from the city, and he had been helping her with the neighborhood complaint. Harkrider said she got an email from Vedetto Wednesday afternoon detailing that Gaona is out of contract with Palma as of June 7th. Community Development deferred questions to the City Public Information Office. Sanchez returned a call stating that the rule that the Airbnb was in violation was the city's zoning ordinance 14-2, which says that boarding and tourist homes are not allowed, she said. Palma did not call the OA Thursday during a scheduled interview time. Making changes. United supermarkets arrive in the Permian Basin. The United family has announced it will begin using the Albertsons Market banner exclusively in New Mexico, which means United supermarkets are coming to Midland and Odessa. This move, a news release stated, is part of the United family's effort to better reflect its West Texas roots and create the best shopping experience for its guests in the Permian Basin. People will see this reflected in the slogan, "We are West Texas, and West Texas is United." Guests can expect to see their favorite local products, but they will also see products from around the state of Texas, a news release said. Just as Albertsons Market A team members volunteered for many nonprofit organizations, United Supermarkets will continue serving alongside the community through their U-Crew volunteers, a news release said. Monetary donations from United Supermarkets to nonprofit organizations will continue through the donations portal, https://www.theunitedfamily.com/donations/#donation-request. These changes will take place at all four Albertsons Market locations in the area. The Midland locations include the stores at 1002 Andrews Highway and 3317 North Midland Drive. The Odessa locations include the stores at 1350 East 8th and 2751 North County Road West. The Market Street locations in Midland and Odessa, also part of the United family, will continue to serve guests in the Permian Basin as normal. Appreciation. Members of West Texas United Relief Coalition were presented with certificates of appreciation signed by Mayor David Turner and Mayor Patrick Payton of Midland by the Chamber of Commerce, June 6th. The event included an airplane flyover and barbecue. The group started with a meeting March 31st with a goal to unite community in the times of global shortage of PPE, serving the immediate Odessa Midland area, and assisting with the distribution of essential devices to communities as far away as Presidio. More than 50 active members now make use to 50 3D printers, 5 laser cutters, 2 industrial machine shops, and much more. Obituary for Friday, June 12th. Johnny Fields. Austin. Johnny C. Fields passed away June 7th. He was born in Waco, the son of Johnny and Bernice Fields, August 23rd, 1927. He married Dot Sarton in 1950. He is survived by his wife Dot, his son Chuck Fields, and 2 daughters, Debbie Heatley and Cindy McLean. 5 grandchildren, 2 step-grandchildren, and 5 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, contributions in Johnny's name may be made to the Lake Travis Education Foundation, Post Office Box 340759, Austin 78734. A private service will be held, though a public celebration is anticipated in the fall. Those interested in the later event may contact Fields and Associates to be notified. Arrangements are by Weed Corley Fish Funeral Home of Austin. Remembrances may be shared at www.wcfish.com. Death notices. Gregory Jack Gonzalez. Greg Gonzalez, 61, died Tuesday, June 9th. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Robert Kevin Scribner. Robert Kevin Scribner, 41, of Odessa, died Sunday, June 7th, in Odessa. Graveside service will be held at 9 a.m. June 13th at Lawn Haven Memorial Park in San Angelo. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Teresa Rose Couture Hare. Teresa Rose Hare, 94, died Monday, June 8th in Austin. Services are pending with Frank W. Wilson Funeral Directors of Odessa. Eddie Faye James Williams. Eddie Faye Williams, 75, of Odessa, died Sunday, June 7th. A graveside service will be held Friday, June 12th at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.